This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Madeline Brand.
This is where all the state dinners and lunches are given.
Are there many state dinners?
Yes, there are. There were almost two a month last year.
That was First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy giving her famous televised tour of the White House in 1962. A new biography of the Kennedy White House years has just been published. It's called Grace and Power. Day to Day's Karen Grigsby Bates has been taking a look at it.
A few days after John Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, his young widow sat down with author William Manchester for a four-hour interview about her slain husband. The result was the poignant bestseller, Death of a President. Much of what Manchester recorded at that time was put away under lock and key. He'd promised the Kennedy family to keep his notes sealed for 40 years. Four decades later, biographer Sally Bedell Smith approached Manchester with a request. She wanted to write about the human, not the historic, side of the Kennedy White House. Would he talk to her? He would, and he asked the Kennedy Library in Boston to open its archives, which contained his notebooks, to Smith. She was awed by what she found.
There were wonderful vignettes and glimpses of the people I was writing about, and Jack and Jackie in the days before the assassination, and Jackie in particular in the days following the assassination, that really brought the whole horrifying period to life in a really intimate way. So, I mean, at times my hands were actually shaking when I was holding these notebooks.
Her research became Grace and Power, the private world of the Kennedy White House. Smith says she thought it was important to show readers the Kennedys were human beings as well as icons. To do this, she spoke with Kennedy intimates who had remained mum for years and read correspondence that until then had been private. Those things allowed Smith to show, for instance, how much Jack Kennedy relied on his wife's ability to assess his associates.
She proved to be extremely useful to her husband, as John Kenneth Galbraith said, by providing sort of astringent assessments of the men around Kennedy. She was a good judge of character, and she would size up the men around Kennedy for who was serving him and which ones were serving themselves.
She served him by using her facility with languages to reach out to different constituencies, as she did here on the campaign trail.
Because it's Columbus Day, we ought to have a speech in Italian.
Cari amici, mi fa davvero piacere essere tra di voi.
Smith says it quickly dawned on Kennedy how useful his wife had become.
My impression from talking to people who were around then is that the more her role developed in the White House and the more he saw she was capable of doing, you know, the more admiration he had for her.
Smith says Jacqueline Kennedy saw her role as providing an important refuge where serious issues could be discussed in a relaxed atmosphere. Smith was surprised to learn that after each day Jack Kennedy spent grappling with the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, he came home to a small dinner party his wife had arranged. One night, his good friend David Ormsby Gore, England's ambassador to the U.S., was their guest.
And at one point, the two of them disappeared, and they went upstairs, and Jackie went looking for them and found them on the floor looking at all the satellite photographs that had been taken of the missile installations, the nuclear missile installations in Cuba, and Gore was advising him on which ones to release to the public.
The public never knew that strategy had been worked out in the family quarters and not the Oval Office. Smith says there was a lot the public didn't know, such as the extent to which Jack Kennedy manipulated the press.
He really enjoyed the company of reporters and co-opted them. He would send them out to Georgetown to go to dinner parties and report back to him on what people were saying, what people were doing, and they willingly complied. He solicited ideas for speeches from people like Walter Lippmann. They understood that they were being flattered, but they loved participating.
Perhaps because they were dazzled by the press didn't report on his many inconsistencies, personal and political. Aside from his marital infidelities, Kennedy had double standards on race. For instance, when several administration stalwarts resigned from Washington's Metropolitan Club for his exclusionary policies, reporters left unmentioned an interesting tidbit. Kennedy himself belonged to a similar club, the Brook, in New York City, and retained his membership right up to his death. Kennedy's national security adviser, McGeorge Bundy, had just been admitted to the Metropolitan in the fall of 1963, when other Kennedy aides had resigned in protest, and Kennedy ribbed him relentlessly about that. Eventually, Bundy changed his mind as he ruefully confessed to a friend while they both walked behind Jack Kennedy's casket.
When the funeral procession was walking by the Metropolitan Club, McGeorge Bundy turned to Charlie Bartlett and said, "You know, I never had a chance to tell him I resigned from that club."
40 years after John Kennedy's death, the public remains fascinated with the Kennedy legacy and style. Both fans and historians will be interested in Sally Bedell Smith's intimate look at what many still regard as modern America's golden couple. For Day to Day, I'm Karen Grigsby Bates.